This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're all part of a global capitalist economy, a system that promised to benefit the rich and the poor alike. Yet, youth unemployment rate has been on the rise, salaries have stagnated for close to 20 years, despite the massive increase in cost of living, cost of education is at an all-time high, and the average millennial and Gen Z cannot even afford adequate housing on a single paycheck, despite it being a fundamental human right. So what went wrong, and what's the solution here? I'm Dashran Johan, and this is Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, a series that explores various issues through a leftist or socialist prism with Parti Socialist Malaysia. On the sixth episode, we do a deep dive on something rather divisive, even amongst leftists. I'm talking about cryptocurrencies. So joining me on the show today to discuss this is Arvind Kadirchelvan. He's the youth chief of Parti Socialist Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Arvind. Perhaps you can start by telling me what exactly is cryptocurrency?
Thank you, Dashran. Actually, cryptocurrency is not just currency, actually. There's a lot of different types of cryptocurrencies and they have different uses for them. But generally speaking, they can be used and they want to be used as a currency, especially Bitcoin. There is a vision where Bitcoin is used as legal tender. And cryptocurrencies are a little different. Just like how I compare just with fiat currency, the paper money that we have. Fiat currency is backed by the central bank of a certain country. Ringgit is backed by BNM, Bank Negara Malaysia. And what BNM says is, I create this money, I give it this amount of value, and I am willing to back this money's value, essentially. So if you go anywhere and you buy, you need to get goods corresponding to this value, essentially. That is what the central bank does. For cryptocurrency, there is no central issuing authority. What cryptocurrency is essentially, if you think about it in abstract view, is a representation of ledgers. So if you do accounts, ledgers are essentially a list of transactions. Let's say you and I, Dashran, you give me a good, for example, let's say you give me a book and I owe you 20 ringgit. I say I don't have that 20 ringgit to give you now. Let's put it in a ledger. So I say Arvind owes Dashran 20 ringgit. And then we think like, never mind lah. I mean like 20 ringgit, I can always pay back later on. Let's just have this kind of relationship between us where we trade goods and services between each other for a certain amount of money lah, essentially. And then at one point we think, okay lah, never mind lah. Now it's time to pay back. We total up everything. And then I pay you whatever money or you pay me whatever money that each of us owe each other. We don't have to do that, you know. We can keep that ledger going forever. And all we need to do is look at the ledger, say, okay, I owe Dashran 20 ringgit. That means I can render him a service or give him a good that is corresponding or lesser than the amount that I owe him, essentially. And you don't have to pay me anything, basically. So you see how the number in that ledger becomes the currency. Because like that tells me you have a certain hold over me that I have to like, you know, satisfy to your needs, lah. Essentially, that is what a cryptocurrency is. The 20 ringgit that I owe you in the ledger, I can call 20 ringgit. Or I can call, for example, 4 euros. Same value. Or I can give it another name and another title and another kind of value. And I say, okay, this 20 ringgit corresponds to 1 Arvind dollars. And that is a cryptocurrency. So that is the first part. That is the second part, sorry, which is the currency part. The crypto part is when you have these kind of transactions in a list, I can always put in, let's say I owe you 20 ringgit, right? I can put in, okay, actually Dashran owes me 100 ringgit without you knowing. That means I'm cheating you out of your money, right? So what cryptocurrency does is uses cryptography, which is encryption, makes things secure. For each transaction, it gives a certain unique identifier. And for a certain number of transactions, it takes that, makes it into a block itself, and that's why it's called a block. Essentially, it's a list of transactions, and with that block, it gives another unique identifier that says, okay, this block is secure with this unique identifier, and each transaction is dependent on the transaction before it. So it gets very, very complicated very quickly, and each block is chronologically linked to each other. That link we call a chain. So you get a blockchain. That's where the blockchain comes from. It's a very simplified idea, lah. But because this cryptography is used, each transaction using that system is very secure. People say much more secure than banking, and I tend to agree with that. It is much more secure than banking, but it also has some associated issues that we can talk about.
And where do the various cryptocurrencies derive its value from, and how does it compare to the way fiat currency draws its value? And when I say fiat, I mean pretty much the money we primarily use today, dollars, ringgit, etc.
This is a very nice question. So let's talk about fiat currency. Before fiat currency, there was something called Bretton Woods system, usually done by the US, where the US dollar was pegged to the value of gold. So amount of gold you have is corresponding amount of strength of your dollar, essentially. And then that was taken away. The fiat system was born, where it's more of like an honor system, essentially, where the central bank will say, this is the value and I'm willing to back that value. Now, this doesn't really like make a difference. Like at the end of the day, when the central bank says it backs that value, the central bank is saying, I have enough reserves to liquidate and give to you. Or I have enough capacity in my government to exploit natural resources to provide that, amount. And usually when thinking about governments and how they think about monetary and fiscal responsibilities, they think about what they can use investors' monies to grow the economies in such a way that they can give back money to the investor, essentially. So there are very material foundations for fiat currency, even though it is an honor system. And there are problems, but we can essentially say that token, which is the fiat, has its backings in material realities. And when these material realities are not there, you know, for one reason or another, maybe excessive debt, maybe there's a famine, drought somewhere, they cannot exploit the natural resources, then that value of that money diminishes. Okay, so cryptocurrency, where does it create value from? Usually, you might think, creation of these cryptocurrencies can derive their value from how they are created. So they are created using this mathematical formula. And you may naturally think, that mathematical formula has a certain value to it, and so that money has a value to it. That's not true. The main value that comes with cryptocurrency is the value that is assigned to it by investors. What happened was they looked at cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, for example, primarily. They thought, this is an interesting way. It's very volatile. You can make money very quickly. A lot of people got into it. And because a lot of people got into it, its value skyrocketed. So since its foundation until now, it's a 16,000% increase, which is a very impressive increase. But all of it is in a very short period of time, all of it due to speculation purely. Because everyone that goes into cryptocurrency, and I used to be in cryptocurrency for a while just to learn how it operates, it is purely speculation, essentially. And every small thing that happens that to Bitcoin, for example, crashes and increases its value dramatically, which is both a pro and a con. And that's what makes cryptocurrency actually quite dangerous because of this volatility, which they say is a strength. But at the end of the day, when you have something that is so speculative in nature, people who invest in it, especially those who don't have enough, they haven't diversified their investments enough, they tend to lose out, essentially.
You're someone who has been very vocal about the fact that you're against crypto. Why so? Is it because of its volatile nature?
I'm against cryptocurrency, and just as I am against the share market, stock market, essentially. And that is because it gives a disproportionate amount of power to people who have capital to manipulate the market in such a way to the detriment of small investors and essentially like take money away from them. That is a material reality that we live in now. But if you take it a little bit more abstract, I'm a Marxist. And I believe that money has a certain function. And the function of money is to increase the productive forces in a certain place to benefit the masses. When you have speculation that is not tied to anything except for a wish to gain more money in the future, you're not materially affecting the masses in any way. In fact, you are taking away a lot of the resources from them that they may have used for their material gains. For example, things like graphics cards are needed to mine cryptocurrency. And graphic card, you may think only gamers use, but actually, you know, the mining that is taking part in the background to create those graphic cards are massive. And if you are creating this high demand for something that essentially is just to make yourself money and not create benefit in the economy in any way, in any which material way, what you're doing is you're taking away the resources from the masses and you are creating more problems in the world. And that's why I'm principally against cryptocurrency. I do not see it as something that benefits the masses in any significant way.
But isn't the volatile, fluctuating nature of the market great for making money? Seems like an opportunity for everyone to generate wealth in a method usually reserved for rich people who play, you know, the stock market and so on and so forth.
This is the great lie that libertarians have told us. Anybody can get into it. Not anybody can get into it. There's two parts of cryptocurrency. One is buying cryptocurrency. One is mining cryptocurrency. And both of them are affected greatly by capital. If you have a lot of money, you can buy a lot of cryptocurrency. If you have a lot of cryptocurrency, then you control that cryptocurrency. Right? If I own like 20% of Bitcoin, tomorrow I sell 10%, the Bitcoin market will crash. And then that allows me to buy more Bitcoin at a discounted price. So I get my, what do you call that, 10% of Bitcoin back at a lower price than I have sold it, which means I made money because I have 20% of Bitcoin. That's the thing. You cannot run away from monopoly in this capitalistic world. People, ordinary people like you and me getting into cryptocurrency have been lied to, mainly because these rich people want to make money. If all of us doesn't want to, put new money into the system, then they cannot make more money from it, right? That's essentially like the great lie. The second part about that is essentially mining. So mining requires a lot of computer energy, basically. A lot of computer work is needed to mine, you know, to create all of these like unique identifiers. It's not an easy task. If it was easy, then it would be very easy to cheat the system and scam people, right? So because it needs a lot of energy and a lot of computer work, people who can afford that computer work, people who can afford all of those graphic cards, those tens of thousands of like, what are the computers that work at one point, big fans to cool them down, electricity to, what do you call that, salur to that to those places. Those people mine disproportionately more coins than ordinary people like you and me. So at no point, at no supply chain of this cryptocurrency, can we envision an ordinary person to be anything but a spectator, or at worst, a victim of cryptocurrencies.
On the show with me today is Arvind Kadir Chelvan, Youth Chief of Party Socialist Malaysia. After a break, we discuss the environmental impact of cryptocurrencies. Keep it here on Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Back to Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and my guest on today's episode is Arvind Kadir Chelvan, Youth Chief of Party Socialist Malaysia, and we're discussing cryptocurrencies. So, Arvind, the thing about crypto is there are loads of people, not just ultra wealthy, but even, let's say, middle class people or regular college educated students, etc., who have made money from it. Perhaps they had a little bit of disposable income and they thought, hey, maybe I'll just put, you know, 1,000 ringgit or 500 ringgit aside on cryptocurrency. Next thing you know, in the span of 6 months, 1,000 ringgit has turned to 10,000 ringgit or even 20,000 ringgit, and they can use that money to beef up their savings, put a down payment on a car, etc.
Of course it works. I mean, like, for at a limited, what do you call the range, it works, essentially. I mean, now, of course, the market has crashed. We can see that it hasn't worked, basically. So it was always on borrowed time. There's always, like, certain periods of time where we see things working out for the better. And we think, okay, maybe something. But when you really look into the base and the core of it, where all of these market manipulative forces are still there, you would see that on the grand scale, people who got into it at the wrong time lose out, basically. So congratulations to those who have made money. You have got into it at the right time and you are very lucky. But to perpetuate the idea that this is a sustainable way to make money is something that is, unless people have millions of ringgit. Let's say you made millions of ringgit and now you put the millions of ringgit into Bitcoin. Yeah, you're going to continue making money. That's the whole point. But people with 200 ringgit, 300 ringgit going into the market, they're not going to be billionaires overnight. And stop telling people this, basically. You know, don't sell your ideas as if they are the norm, essentially.
Now, there is no direct material value to cryptocurrencies today. You barely can buy and sell things in the real world with crypto. We know that stock markets are highly speculative too. But the difference is there is an actual material product attached to it, from property companies, streaming platforms, food companies, etc., etc., etc. Is this an important difference to note?
I think it's important to identify that we have come to a point where the rich people have no other way to make money than exploit us even further. That's why you see cryptocurrencies and NFTs come up, these kind of fake scam things that they have to resort to, essentially. But I would caution people, and I've cautioned myself in what I've written before, in thinking that this justifies the stock market. No, the stock market is still speculative. It is still invalid, basically, and it still needs to be dismantled in the grand scheme of things because of its speculative nature. It is another iteration of the stock market, maybe a little bit more aggressive, is cryptocurrency, essentially. So it is good that we identify it for what it is, which is a further degeneracy of capitalism. But we shouldn't justify one or the other, basically.
But why is it important that a figment that we conjured up, whether it's cryptocurrency, the stock market, the paper money that we use, why is it important that they have direct ties to actual materials?
Why do we make money, essentially? You know, we make money to buy things. Houses, cars, food, clothes. These are all material things, basically. To have something whose value does not correspond to any material things at all, something that cannot be exchanged. If I go outside, if I have one Bitcoin, one Bitcoin is what, $16,000 or something? Let's say $60,000. If I go out and want to buy something for $16,000, essentially, it's very difficult to do in Bitcoin. Yeah, that we have to, at one point, we need to exchange it with a fiat currency. Because the fiat currency, people believe, oh, okay, this is backed by something. And that's why it's very important to have value backed by something else. Okay, so this one, we need to go to Marx, basically. When Marx, volume, Capital Volume 3, if I'm not mistaken, about value. When you look at how value is derived and you look at how it corresponds to prices, then you will understand that value essentially is a social relationship between people. How much time of labor that I'm willing to expend for something, that intrinsically denotes its value. And I'm being very simplifying. So to have something that does not correspond to this at all means people are telling you this thing costs 16,000 ringgit and you're just believing it, you know. It's like such a vague, dangerous statement, and you believe it, you go into it, suddenly it crashes and they say, oh, it was always speculative. You know, that's the kind of invalid nature that we are talking about here.
Now, what's interesting about the crypto landscape is that even the left is very divided on it. Crypto enthusiasts argue that it's the currency of the future, and more importantly, it's decentralized and not controlled by the banks. In fact, I've read arguments that Karl Marx himself would have been pro-cryptocurrency because of its decentralized and democratized nature. What are your thoughts on this?
Now, Marx actually, if you read, if I'm not mistaken, it's in Capital. He has something called, if I'm not mistaken, it's imaginary capital. Capital that doesn't exist. And that is essentially cryptocurrency, basically. So the man is a true visionary, you know. So if you read Marx in that sense, you will understand that Marx does not believe in this and would not support this. In fact, he'll be vehemently against it. So a lot of our socialist friends, they really need to think back on the term decentralization. It's a fad, you know. A lot of people get into things like they think more decentralization is always good. I disagree with that. At the end of the day, Marxism or socialism, whatever you want to call it, concerns itself with material needs of the masses and the control of the means of production by the masses. Karl Marx called it a dictatorship of the proletariat, which means the working people control the means of production, essentially. Does cryptocurrency give working people like you and me the means of production? Very, very tenuously, you know. It just says that you have the ability to mine, but it is still not controlled by me. It is controlled by people who have the means to mine, essentially. You know, let's say gold mining. I can go outside with a pickaxe and I try to like gold mine. I can try to pan for gold. I'll get 7 ringgit a day, maybe. Big gold corporations out there are going to always get more gold than me, essentially. So this kind of like mentality among socialists is something that I really need to point out and say, you're falling into the trap that the libertarians have set for you. You know, they are showing you something that for you, because you have used parlance before that is similar, very attractive. But you have to look into it, look into things a little bit deeper to understand that, in fact, decentralization is decentralization for decentralization's sake is not Marxism. Decentralization to devolve power to the masses, that is Marxism. And you have to critically think about whether this does that or not.
Would you say that what people are actually attracted to, besides making money fast, is the surface level philosophy of crypto, then the idea of democratization, decentralization, not tied to banks, things like that, rather than how it actually works in practice, in the real world, which is it is essentially a highly speculative market, not tied to anything real or any which value is not tied to anything tangible. That is a market that is manipulated by the ultra wealthy, even more perhaps than the stock market.
I agree, essentially, with this statement. It's all due to careful marketing that these things have come across. Actually, even now, whenever crypto markets and NFT markets crash, some celebrity out there will express their support for some cryptocurrency to bring it up again because they want to make money, essentially. Very simple. But I go back to what I said. I congratulate cryptocurrency enthusiasts for identifying a unique problem, which is commercial banks creating too much loans. And this is something that we need to take seriously. It is true that the banking system is a parasitic entity. It needs a radical reform. And the main problem with banks creating new money through the creation of debt is that this debt is not focused. You know, what is debt? Why do we take debt? We take debt to better our lives, right? That is for us. If you think about a country, debt to service the growth of the economy makes sense. That is the valid form of growth, essentially. You cannot have no money and grow. You have to spend money to make money. Right? Where are you going to get money from? Debt. You know, this is the framework that the world is in at the moment. But the conventional banks, they don't really care about like what this debt is used for. And these are used for unproductive practices. Where does the debt go? For example, big businesses take a lot of debt. Right? And then suddenly they cannot service the debt. The government comes in to bail them out. Billions and billions and billions of ringgit or USD gets burnt off like that. Bad debt, you know? And we talked before about the housing market, how like capitalists with many huge portfolios of real estate use that real estate to take more debt so that they don't have to pay taxes. Bad debt, because they have not materially benefited the world in any way. In fact, they are taking more and more advantage of a depleting resource, which is housing. They are making things worse, essentially, because they are making housing more unaffordable. Bad debt. So all of these unproductive practices contribute to things like inflation, things like the economic system being so disproportionately aligned. And this is where my congratulations becomes a little bit skewed. I congratulated the crypto enthusiasts, but now the solution is not the destruction of fiat currency. That is a libertarian's dream. It is to refine the utilization of debt and socialize banking. What we need to talk about is the common ownership of banks, so that people can decide where these debts go to. Small micro debts to single mothers in rural areas so that they can sell their Kropoleko good debt. Because, you know, it grows the economy there, you know, debt that is focused on a social need, for example, social welfare systems that bring more people into the economy, grows the economy, good debt. All of this needs more control by the masses. At the end of the day, we need the common people to take control of this. And only through that do we gain a socialist dream of what a banking sector is, essentially, and not this kind of like halfway solution.
You touched on this earlier, but I'd like you to expand on how exactly the crypto landscape as a whole impacts underprivileged communities.
Okay, there's a direct and indirect. You know, directly, the people get bought into this idea of buying cryptocurrency is good for them. They put in whatever small amount of money that they have. For them, it's big because it's maybe the life savings. You know, some people have sold their houses and their land to go into this and then just to be cheated out of it.
How would you respond to those who bring up the argument that nobody forces people who can't afford to get into crypto? And if that you lose money, such as your life savings, which you put into crypto, it's due to your own negligence or lack of financial or crypto literacy.
You see, Dashran, I had such a difficult time today trying to make these words that they use make sense to the common people. And that is a difficulty that I had. The language and jargon itself that they use is so difficult to penetrate that, you know, they, of course, no, they say, oh, I'm not legally culpable because this word means this in this language or something like that, essentially. And we cannot think of these people as good people. At the end of the day, what they want to do is make money, right? Who cares what you call that, whether you make money or not? I want to make money. So when they are communicating this to the masses, the hype is there. They're not going to say, this is a very dangerous thing. You have to be very careful. No, what they go and say is, I've made 3,000 ringgit. You can make it too. And people get bought into that, like it or not. It's just like when, you go to the underprivileged people and some private universities who are looking only to make money, go to this poor parent and say, I will make your son into a doctor. They get into it. They see that their course is not accredited. People are of the underclass. And when you go into it with this amount of money, and you, a person with a lot of money, like with a lot of Bitcoin, for example, sells it, and then your thing crashes, your value crashes, and you don't have enough money circulation, for yourself to sustain that time period for it to come back up, and you have to sell off whatever thing you have, whatever holdings you have, just so you have money enough to eat. People get into a lot of debt because of that, and people get into huge financial strains because that is a direct one. Indirect one, because of all of these environmental impacts, because of all these resource depletion impacts, the miners and stuff like that. And that disproportionately affects people who live near the sea. You know, the sea levels may rise, or, you know, they live in houses that are not prepared for the amount of weather changes that is called brought for by climate change. Rich people are not affected. They have giant ranches. They have underground bunkers all. So that's how it disproportionately affects the underclass.
Another problem critics have with cryptocurrency, and I think this even includes NFTs, and this I think is a problem that's not highlighted enough, is the environmental impact of it. Can you discuss this a little bit?
So actually, this is not just cryptocurrency. This is a blockchain technology itself, because that is what takes a lot of energy. So we go to certain reports. We saw that there's a recent report from this group called Galaxy Digital that showed the Bitcoin network used around 113 terawatt hours per year, just as much as a small country, about Malaysia size, uses that amount of energy per year. See, this has been disingenuously compared to the global banking industry. And I said disingenuously because they say, oh, okay, the global banking industry takes more than double of this amount of energy. But it's the global banking industry, you know, versus Bitcoin. Bitcoin services a few hundred million people. The global banking industry, order of billions. So you see, this is twice as big as that. But the amount of people served is 10 times, 100 times bigger for the global banking system. So there is a disproportionate impact. And the impact of cryptocurrency is higher. Some people say, actually, the energy that cryptocurrency uses mostly is renewable energy, which, you know, there is a point to that. And there are certain studies, especially one from Cambridge, I think, that shows 39% of cryptocurrency is mined using renewable energy. So this is quite a high penetration. We congratulate them. However, there are some drawbacks lah, because these are self-reported estimates. So when it's bad, they don't report lah. So there may be a skew. We're not sure. But another thing is the primary source of renewable energy is hydroelectricity. So you, if you go to the Orang Asli that stopped the Tenom Dam and then ask them, do you like hydroelectricity? Then you know how we feel about big hydro. So this is something that we cannot consider to be green. The environmental impacts are large. And more than that is the resource depletion part, basically. Because You can use energy for certain things, but if you use energy for things that do not benefit the masses, that do not impact on the lives of many people positively, but impacts on them negatively, then for what you use it for this reason, you can use it for another reason, right? So simple things like that we need to be aware of.
So, Arvind, what's the solution here? Should crypto trading and mining be banned? Should it be regulated?
I have given this a lot of thought, actually, because first thing we need to think about is taxation. Because you buy into mining is one thing. Mining also has this issue. You buy into cryptocurrency using fiat currency. That means a country is becoming weaker. Yeah, you're taking the currency out of circulation. And if there's no money in circulation, then the economy essentially stagnates. What you're doing is you're taking money that is backed by something and then you're exchanging it for a token that is not backed by anything. That is bad for you as well. But thinking about from a country's point of view, how do we tax this? How do we tax the transactions in the secondary market? So when those taxation laws come in, then you will see a lot of pressure on crypto markets, and you're going to see a lot of people who don't want to be involved anymore because now they have to report on their taxation and stuff like that, essentially. But the mechanism of taxation itself is difficult, you know. You need an entity, for example, BNM, to hold a certain amount of reserves of cryptocurrency. You need the BNM to say, actually, we are the only people that you can exchange cryptocurrency with for fiat currency to pay your taxes, basically. So all of that things need to be sorted out. Whether or not, and that will happen. That's not something that may happen or not. That is something that will happen. But whether or not we need to go around breaking mining equipment and destroying this, I think moralistically we can say yes, we need to, because this is taking away resources from the people that are actually in need, and this is causing a lot of environmental impacts and resource depletion impacts that disproportionately affects the lower class. But in practice, can it be done or not? I think even if we just bide our time just a little bit longer, we will see the death of cryptocurrency. And we are seeing already, actually, with the Bitcoin market crashing, essentially. So, that's what I essentially think. I apologize for this non-answer, but it's a difficult problem to solve.
All right, Arvind, before we wrap this conversation up, would you have a final message for us?
I think we live in troubling times, and I don't blame people for trying to get into cryptocurrency to make money. I understand you're going through a lot right now, but this is not a solution. This will only if it doesn't make you poor, it will make another person poor. And usually I don't like to eat by stealing another person's food, and I'm sure you guys won't as well. So let's think about the true solution to this, which is socialization of banking. And us at the Socialist Party are interested in solving that particular issue and trying to bring this forward. Yeah, apologies to all the crypto enthusiasts and NFT enthusiasts who currently hate me, but what to do? That's life.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Arvind. That was Arvind Kadir Chelvan, Youth Chief of Party Socialist Malaysia. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can also check us out on podcasts. We're available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.